Hi, it's Tracy. You know those mornings when you wake up already feeling like you're running behind? Your brain is buzzing with a million tabs open and you haven't even had your coffee yet? Yeah, I get it. And that is exactly why I created Blends. I created it for myself. Blends is a daily 10 minutes or less mix of coaching, teaching, mindfulness, intention, affirmations, breathwork, humor, gratitude, and inspiration, all blended together to suit our fast-paced ADHD brains. It's encouraging and fun and a little bit of everything, which is exactly why it works so well for our ADHD brains. With each blend, you get 10 minutes of me coaching you each morning that's all about grounding you, shaking off the overwhelm, finding the positive emotion, and calming your nervous system. Because starting the day with me in your ear coaching you, adding positive emotion, encouragement, some humor, a dash of inspiration, and optimism and joy is like adding a shot of honey to your Earl Grey tea. Everything is just better. But here's the thing. This program, it is brand new and super close to my heart. In fact, it won't even be available until the first Monday in June, June 3rd to be exact, because I'm creating it right now. And that's also why I'm offering Blends at a special early supporter rate of just $47. You heard that right. That's a one-time charge of $47 to have me in your ear inspiring and encouraging and coaching you 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, for a whole year. That's less than 18 cents a day. It's a total steal. But I just decided that as much work as this already is and will be, Blends brings me so much joy because where I'm different than most everyone else in the ADHD space is that I am all about the hope and the optimism and our strengths. And I already see your brilliance, and I am committed to making sure that you see it too. So if you're like me, and that daily reminder of who you really are is so important to you, if you crave something engaging to kickstart your mornings, join me, and let's flip our weaknesses into strengths, one blend at a time. You can go to ADHDforsmartwomen.com/blends and sign up. Let's make your mornings, or your evenings, you could do it anytime, hell, you could do it both times, positively brilliant. Again, ADHDforsmartwomen.com/blends. Richard Branson, Michael Phelps, Justin Timberlake, James Carville. Wait a minute. Where are the women? Greta Gerwig, Lisa Ling, Audra McDonald, Simone Biles. That sounds like a list of highly successful titans in a variety of industries. They all have ADHD, but you don't hear much about that now, do you? You know what else you don't hear about? Are the 43% of people with ADHD who are in excellent mental health. Why aren't we talking about them and what they're doing right? I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka, and that's exactly what we do here. I'm a lawyer, not a doctor, a lifelong student, and now the author of my new book, ADHD for Smart-Ass Women. I'm also a certified ADHD coach and the creator of Your ADHD Brain is A-OK, a patented system that helps ADHD women just like you get unstuck and fall in love with their brilliant brains. Here, we embrace our too muchness and we focus on our strengths. My guests and I credit our ADHD for some of our greatest gifts. And to those who still think they're too much, too impulsive, too scattered, too disorganized, I say, no one ever made a difference by being too little. Hello, hello, hello. I am your host, Tracy Otsuka. Thank you so much for joining me here for another episode of ADHD for Smartass Women. As you know, my purpose is always to show you who you are and then inspire you to be it. And in the thousands of ADHD women that I've had the privilege of meeting, I've never met a one that wasn't truly brilliant at something. Not one. So of course, I am just delighted to introduce you to Dr. Sharon Saleen. Dr. Saleen is the author of the award-winning book, What Your ADHD Child Wishes You Knew. She specializes in working with ADHD and neurodivergent children, teens, adults, and families, helping them improve executive functioning skills, resilience, self-confidence, and personal relationships. She also consults with schools, clinics, and businesses internationally and runs a private practice. Dr. Saleen is a part-time lecturer at the Smith College School for Social Work, blogger for Psychology Today, contributing expert on Mass Live, an NBC affiliate in Massachusetts, serves on the editorial board of and hosts a biweekly Facebook Live event for Attitude Magazine. Her writing has also been featured in numerous online and print publications, including MSN.com, The Psychotherapy Networker, Smith College Studies in Social Work, and Attention Magazine. Oh my gosh, Sharon, that sounds just like an ADHD brain. There is so much. Did I get all of that right?
Yes, and thank you so much for that lovely introduction. I am thrilled and honored to be here, and I hope this is the beginning of several conversations with you. I love your work. I just love the title of your podcast and the people that you're reaching, Smartass Women with ADHD. It's great. It just makes me smile.
Thank you so much. I'm delighted to have you here. Now, I know your story is a little different. I always want to talk about my women guests' ADHD diagnoses. And I know you're a psychologist, you've diagnosed yourself, but you do not have a formal diagnosis. And I would just love to know a little bit about your story.
Well, it's such a great relief to share this. So I grew up, I was always kind of anxious, had many interests, succeeded at many of my interests, kind of a gourmand approach. I liked this and this and this. And there was, you know, why not just do it all kind of a thing. And when I went through menopause, I had a very difficult time. I was unable to take any sort of medications due to family history of breast cancer. And, you know, my emotional regulation was terrible, to be honest. I would just, you know, I'm not proud of it. I would yell. I would cry. Sometimes I would slam doors. I mean, really terrible. And it was mortifying to me. I mean, here I am, I'm a psychologist, respected in my work. And I was having these moments of just completely falling apart. And, you know, I spoke to doctors and they're like, well, you know, sometimes it's really hard when you go through menopause if you don't take medication. I'm like, no, it's more than that. And that passed. I wrote my book. And after my book came out, about a year after my book came out, it's 5 years this year, so it's very exciting. There was a really like an outpouring of research about women with ADHD, that you could be very smart and your intelligence will compensate for some of your ADHD challenges, such as emotional regulation, time management. I'm sure you're aware of this, whether it's impulse control or being able to prioritize. You know, we all have our executive functioning strengths and challenges. And when I started to read this, what I realized is that for me, because emotional control has been very challenging and I struggle with time management, I always underestimate how long something's going to take and overestimate my capacity to do it. And sometimes I say things that I wish I didn't say. I kind of put it together like, you know what? I'm one of those women who would not meet the criteria for a diagnosis before, but now would meet the criteria. And partially that's because I feel things very intensely. I have that tidal wave of emotion when something goes on, particularly around anxiety or if I'm angry. So I have given myself a diagnosis of ADHD. I don't qualify it as, you know, mild or moderate. It's just there. And I do my best to work around it. I have skills now that I didn't have 10 years ago. maturity helps, and getting to the other side of menopause helped also.
Totally. And I think that's my experience as well. In fact, I don't know if I coined this term or if I found it somewhere else, you know, how everything kind of gemishes, but I call it maturity onset ADHD. And when I look back at my childhood and I look back, you know, throughout life, definitely there are the symptoms, traits, signs of ADHD. You know, I've always been hyper chatty. I've always been involved in everything all at the same time. I've always been impulsive, fearless, you know, entrepreneurial. But pretty much it was the good, you know, they were good things. And it wasn't until perimenopause and menopause where literally the cart came off the rails. And I didn't even identify, like, I couldn't even figure out who I was anymore. This incredible confidence that I had was literally gone. And my handwriting changed. I couldn't, you know, button things, all the things that I could do, not all of them, but many things I could do before and never think a second thought about it. In fact, I was really good at them, like entertaining. All of a sudden, I could barely get dinner on the table just for, you know, my husband and myself. So I relate to that. Yet I do see that I've always had the symptoms. And so I'm curious, when you think back on your childhood, and like you, I was a pretty good student. I always felt like I could do better. You know, I mean, I was always told, she's so smart. She's such a great student, if she would just stop interrupting everybody around her. And so I'm curious, what were the signs for you? Were there signs?
I don't think you would have said that there were signs, except that when I had to take the SATs in high school, I mean, I was an all honors student, and I didn't do very well on the SATs as well as I would have liked, partially because I was very anxious. I panicked about the time restraints. Like, if I could have taken the SATs and not had a time restraint, I think I would have done so much better. Because when I took subject tests or AP tests in particular subject areas, I did very, very well. So that was a sign to me that it was, you know, if I thought about it, it was very difficult for me to concentrate on things I didn't like calculus, you know, was very difficult. I mean, I did it. I took it. I was doing really well in the middle of the year. I got accepted early to college. And then I just was like, you know, I think I got like a high C. My teacher came up. She was like, what happened to you? I'm like, going to college, there are no requirements. So never taking math again, which wasn't exactly true. Because then, of course, I went to school to become a psychologist and I had to take statistics. So,
which is the worst.
So I think that is what I would look back on, is sort of the intense waves of insecurity or worry about things such as that. Like, if I would look back on my school and also trying to do too much, you know, which is very common for people with ADHD.
Were you ever good with time, or has time always been a challenge?
This is the thing that's interesting. You know, I think both of my parents have a form of ADHD. My dad has a lot of malapropisms. So he'll say, like, barbecue wire instead of barbed wire or things like that, or cloud 99 instead of cloud 9.
But that's better than cloud 9. Don't you know that?
Sure. Cloud 99 is better. Yes. And my mom was not good at managing time. So, you know, did I learn how to manage time poorly? Possibly. But did I have a role model of someone who was always trying to squeeze things in? For sure. Because of her undiagnosed and untreated ADHD. So it was a combination of not learning and then not actually understanding my own time clock. I know that, you know, setting aside time to do something, and then that's not quite enough time for actually what it takes.
Okay. But is the problem that, like me, you just don't understand time? Like, it makes no sense to me how 15 minutes can all of a sudden turn into 5 hours when I'm interested in something, but 15 minutes can also feel like 5 hours when I'm not.
Well, for me, it's like, I feel like I never have enough time. There's always this internal feeling of rushing, you know, like, oh, you know, and cutting things too close. It's so annoying. You know, I'll wake up in the morning like, okay, I want to go to the YMCA to go swimming. Well, I have to remember that that takes a full hour because I have to walk down the block, which is really great that it's down the street. That's 5 minutes or so. Then I need to go up to the locker room. And so that's like 10 minutes there. Then I want to swim 40 or 45 minutes. So now I'm at 55 minutes and I want to shower and sit in the sauna and get dressed. So that's like an hour and 15 minutes. It's not an hour. you know? And I was like, oh, it's just an hour. And then I was late. I'm like, no, actually it's an hour and 15 minutes. So what I'm trying to do now at this stage of my life is to say, okay, I'm going to add on 10 minutes for everything. So it's going to take me this long. I'm going to add on 10 minutes. I've started to do that. And of course, I use the notifications on my phone a lot. So I have a 15-minute alarm before I do something. Sometimes I'll have a day before alarm. That helps me. But the main thing is this internal pressure, like there's just not going to be enough time. So I better hurry, hurry, hurry. And then I'm constantly feeling the sense of being crammed, you know, or overwhelmed. And then when I set aside a block of time to do something, I'm like, whoa, what am I going to do with all this time?
But then the time goes so fast, right? And you're like, I had all this time. What happened?
Exactly. I'm just going to prepare for this webinar. It won't take that long. I'll set my time timer for an hour and I'll be finished. And like an hour, 90 minutes later, I'm finished. And then I'm frustrated with myself. And so it becomes this kind of like cycle of a little bit of blame. Like, why couldn't I do it in the hour that I set aside instead of realizing that that hour isn't humanly possible?
Right. Because we expect so much of ourselves, right?
We do. Particularly for smart ass women with ADHD who are super competent in some areas. We're like, oh, I can do that. No problem. And then really you can't. Like that's at least what I'm sort of learning at this stage, which is that I need to say no. Like I need to really have an honest conversation with myself. My friend Sheldon says a come to Jesus meeting, you know, where I sit down. I'm like, let's face it. You know, you're not going to be able to do all this in one day. You have a list of 20 things. Pick the top three and pick one thing for one block of time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's just so frustrating though. And I think about my friends who are neurotypical and I always feel bad because I mean, I have a list a mile long of like friends that we owe dinners to. Right. But then I think about, okay, and this used to be something I did all the time. It's not as easy for me anymore. Number one, number two, I love the cooking. I hate the planning and I hate the shopping. Number three, I think about all of the things that I can't do because I'm doing these things and I'm so behind, you know, so it just becomes this big snowball and then the list gets longer and longer. And I'm like, okay, what if I hired a caterer and I just invited everybody all at the same time? But of course that costs money, right?
Right. I think it's really helpful if we see ourselves as a bookshelf with many volumes. And so you don't read, I mean, maybe you do read three books at a time. So, but generally you're going to take one book out from that bookshelf and take a look at it before you take another. And so we want to really give that to ourselves to say, well, I can't have 10 people for a dinner party. That's just too much for me unless I'm willing to, you know, have it catered. Maybe I'll have three people come over or two couples and it could be a potluck, something like that. Like I'll host it. So for me, I think it's just really trying to balance my appetite with what I can actually digest.
Yeah, that's a really interesting analogy. Okay, so I am curious, you've talked a lot about anxiety, and that is why I really wanted to have you here. And so I want to know with your brain, do you have one of those busy brains that is just constantly going? Is the hyperactivity more internal or is it kind of both, internal and external?
I would say both. I think my mind can be scattered. I think the more pressure that I feel to do the 20 things on my list, the more scattered I feel, which is true because stress and anxiety target our weakest executive functioning skills first. And so what will happen is that I'll see this list and of course my emotional control and my time management will be targeted first. So I'll start to feel anxious. And then I'll worry about time. So both of those things can happen at the same time. So there'll be a little like rushing around, like, you know, with my list of errands. And then there'll also be this internal experience. And I'm trying, in the last few years, I've developed a meditation practice and I use Insight Timer every morning. And I do some of their challenges and their courses, or I just have my favorite meditations, but I take 15 minutes to do that. And I'm a visual person. So I do meditations that have a visual component to them. So for example, imagine that you're sitting by a lake, or imagine that you're walking on a path in the forest. And I have started to create my own meditations that I use in the groups that I do. And people really, really like them. I think it's helpful because for that visual component, a lot of people with ADHD, if you're just like, focus on your breathing, oh, it's so boring. But if I can focus on my breathing and see myself in a particular space, and there's a question that's being asked of me, then my whole body will surrender and slow down.
Learning how to regulate our own nervous systems, it's literally a game changer. So I want to ask you, do you think anxiety and stress are the same thing?
Good question. I think they run on the same channels, but I would say that they are not the same thing. Stress is a question of too much. When we are stressed, it's because there are too many things that we are attempting to do. And we're not initially anxious. The anxiety comes with the feeling like I need to do all these things and I don't see how I'm going to do all these things. So I'm start to feel anxious. Anxiety is a physical response to worried thinking. And so what happens is we have this list of things we want to do, and then we become worried we're not going to do that list. And then we start to have the physiological experience of anxiety, which is a shortness of breath, maybe a sweatiness, maybe clenching your teeth, maybe a tightness in your chest. And then that's where you're living, you know, sort of what I would call stress anxiety, you know, that you're in the mix. I'm going to come up with a word for that at some point. And that's different than burnout, which is a question of not enough. So what happens is that when you live in this, you know, stress anxiety, I guess I'll call it stress anxiety for too long, when you live in that. So when the anxiety comes in with the stress, your cortisol system is connected. So this is where stress and anxiety connect, because it's the same pathways of the brain. Your adrenaline is activated and it's shooting through your body as if you're seeing a tiger in the jungle, instead of just responding to an email from your boss. Your body experiences the same amount of danger. So when we talk about burnout, what happens is that we've been in stress for too long and now we're just depleted. And the treatment is different. So for stress, it's about pruning. You have to take some things out off that list, out off your plate. You know, I have a client who said, people go around saying I have a lot on my plate. And she said, I have a lot on my plate. It's just my plate is smaller because I have ADHD. And I love that so much, you know, and that's where the anxiety will kick in. And so with stress, we want to, you know, shrink what's on the plate, actually. With burnout, we need to go to a different restaurant. You know, we basically need to go to a restaurant where, you know, you're going to sit in a really comfortable chair and someone's going to decide what food you're going to have that is all of your favorites. And it's delivered to you in this beautiful arrangement. You know, the treatment for burnout is self-care. The treatment for burnout is slowing down and paying attention to yourself. What are you going to do for yourself? How are you going to fill your own well? Because your well is empty.
So burnout is just being in that stressful, anxious situation for too long.
Right. It's the consequence of that.
Okay. It's the consequence. Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Right. Because you're not going to feel burned out because you're stressed by one thing. That's not the problem. It's the accumulated stress that becomes the problem. And for many women who are tasked with working, with being the engine in their family, the person who schedules the appointments, who makes sure that there's a vacation planned, who has to go grocery shopping and prepare the meals. Because even in, you know, 50% partnerships where, you know, one partner is doing one thing and one partner is doing other, someone is still kind of taking the zoomed out perspective, you know, is up at 30,000 feet.
Project management, like of the family. And I hear that all the time, that women are like, I don't want to be the project manager. You need to, yes, you will go get the milk for me or for the family, but you need to know when the milk is running out. I don't need to be the one that's, you know, telling everybody what they need to do. I completely, and I'm not the project manager in my family. My husband definitely is. And I can't even imagine if I had to handle that too.
Right. And I was the project manager in my family. I was the engine in my family. I handled all of the appointments, all the medical appointments, the haircuts. I mean, did my husband coach soccer? Yes. Did he coach tennis? Sure. And would he take the kids if there was something that I couldn't go to? Yes. But I was the one who held all that, and I held it all. And so that's why I didn't think I had ADHD for a long time, because I was able to do that. But when estrogen leaves your body, estrogen moderates mood, estrogen moderates attention, estrogen moderates your sex drive. And so it has this effect on your brain. And when it leaves your brain, suddenly you can't do the things you used to do. And it's not that every woman who goes through menopause has ADHD, but I think a lot of people like us, when we go through menopause, we realize, this is interesting. I miss having this thing, this chemical that used to help me create more balance or live with more balance.
I'm just curious, this is an aside, but when you were pregnant, was your brain the sharpest it's ever been?
I was in graduate school when I was pregnant. And so I would say that my brain was pretty sharp until like the third trimester when I was just, you know, more emotional and things like that. But that first year, the first two trimesters, I got a lot done. Like there was no problem. I was whizzing through that first year of graduate school with my doctorate.
Yeah. No, absolutely. So how can anxiety affect motivation? Because sometimes anxiety, it's not all bad, right? Sometimes we need that jolt, right? That adrenaline in order to get the things done that we want to get done.
Well, there are two types of anxiety. And really, when we think about anxiety in general, there's productive anxiety. And that actually is the anxiety that motivates us to do something. So we want to do a good job. That motivates us. We want to complete something. That motivates us. We've set a reward for ourselves after we finish the dishes. We get to watch our show. That motivates us. That's anxiety producing. But I'm just saying, you know, you're giving a talk at work, you're nervous about it, of course. If you've never done it, it's natural to be nervous about something you've never done. But if you've given many talks and you're still finding that you're having this kind of performance anxiety, it will motivate you to do a good talk. And it will also hold you back from giving the best talk you can, because your brain is partially paying attention to how you're doing while you're doing it. And that can really interfere our performance and our productivity. The other type of anxiety is toxic or maladaptive anxiety. So the first is often called adaptive anxiety. I like productive anxiety better, and toxic anxiety. So this is the kind of anxiety about things you cannot control. So for example, you know, will people like me after they listen to this podcast? I don't know. I hope so, but I can't control that. You know, will the plane I'm on have to make an emergency landing? I don't know. I can't control that. These types of things, you know, will I have a good review from my boss? You don't really know. You've done your best and you have to wait and see. And so this kind of anxiety, this kind of really toxic anxiety, the part of us that tells us we're not okay, we're not good enough, there's always more that we need to be doing, that holds us back. And that actually can create all kinds of mental health issues as well as physical health issues. And so we really want to address that by understanding what it is we can control and manage and what we can't, because we can't control certain things, and that's okay. You know, I can't control what time my husband's going to come home from work. So I can't plan an elegant meal, because I don't know, because he works at a hospital and he's a chaplain and there could be an emergency. Yesterday there was an emergency and he didn't come home till late. So I set up the things. I'll do my best. And maybe it's a stew, or I'll just cook everything except the main portion, and or I'll cook it all because I'm hungry, and I'll say, I'm sorry, I couldn't wait anymore. So we have to really think about what it is we can control and what we cannot. And that can help with that toxic anxiety. And if you can't control it, then you have to really rely on your resources, whether it's productive or toxic anxiety. Anxiety says blah, 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 and you can't handle it. And so we have to talk back to that part of ourselves and be able to say, I'm not sure if I can handle this. It's normal to be nervous or worried in that situation. What have I done in the past in a similar time when I was worried or nervous that I could apply to this situation? Because what happens is that anxiety is a shapeshifter. So you'll deal with a worry about a specific thing over here, like I'm worried that my father, who has a cold, is going to catch pneumonia and die. Okay, I can't do anything about that. He had a cold this week. He didn't get pneumonia. He's still alive. Was a little mad that I didn't call him sooner because I forgot. Because I was busy doing something for work. So what I have to say to myself is, you can't control that. What you can control is reaching out to your father. If something happens, you know how to interact with the medical world, and you'll drive yourself down to Philadelphia, because I live in Massachusetts, immediately, and you'll be there. So we have to learn how to talk back to our anxiety, and most of us don't.
Well, I think most of us don't even realize that just because we're thinking it doesn't make it true, right?
Correct.
How we beat ourselves up and we think that, oh, that's just our brain, and our brain has basically its own brain, its own mind. It controls us. That's what we think, right? That it controls us. So I'm really curious. We hear all these statistics and they're constantly changing, but clearly a very high percentage of women with ADHD have anxiety. In my experience with women, because that's who I work with, I have never met a woman with ADHD who didn't have some anxiety.
I have to agree with you 100% on that. I think many women with ADHD have anxiety. Many girls and women are referred to therapy or counseling because of anxiety or depression, and ADHD is not considered, particularly if you're bright, because when you're bright, your intelligence will compensate for some of your executive functioning challenges in ways, or you've created systems for yourself that make it possible for you to do that. I think that what we see with a lot of women and men with ADHD, and approximately 50% of women and men with ADHD have an anxiety disorder. That's separate from those people who run on the anxious side, but they don't have a disorder because it hasn't been named or recorded somewhere, right? So, you know, I like to think of anxiety as a condition that we live with rather than something that you're going to fix, because you're not going to get rid of it. It's part of how we're wired. We've lived as a species for a long time because anxiety keeps us alive. Fight, flight, freeze. This is what we do, right? Hopefully we're not freezing when there's a tiger who's 100 yards away while we're collecting our blueberries or whatever. But maybe blueberries and tigers don't go together. Probably not. But you know what I'm saying, like if you're out collecting your nuts or your berries in the jungle, but you know, we're going to turn around and we're going to go back to our cave really fast before our cognition kicks in. That's how we are wired. And we want that because we need that to stay safe and secure. The problem is that cognition, our thinking brain, comes in and says, well, what if this? What if that? What are you going to do then? What if this happens and you can't do the thing that you think you're going to do, and you start spiraling off? And that's when we have to interrupt. So there will always be things that trigger us, Tracy, things that set us off, and we have to respond to that trigger with that calm, centered part of ourselves that we love. I encourage you to give it a name. Mine has a name. So does my ogre. They both have names, so I can talk to them. But we want to be able to, puff up that wise, calm part of ourselves to deflate the worried thinking, because it's that worried thinking that sets off the anxiety, the physical response, and then the negative beliefs. It's a cycle. I know you want to know the names of my inner ally and my inner ogre, so I'll just tell you.
I'd love to know the names.
I use it all the time because I want to tell people so they can do this for themselves. So my inner ogre is called Perfect Poindexter. Perfect Poindexter helps me get started on projects, and it motivates me to do a good job. Sometimes Perfect Poindexter gets in the way of completing something because it's not right enough. Okay. It doesn't look good enough, or it isn't written well enough. I have some go-tos in those situations. Like I might send something to a friend, or I'll just put it away and come back to it. And then my inner ally, or I like to say my inner Jedi, because he's my inner Jedi warrior, is Tina Trailblazer. And it's the part of me that loves to be outdoors, that loves to go hiking, walking by the river, looking at the birds in the sky, smelling that clean air. And this is the part of me that is centered and strong and courageous and has that inner wisdom. And so I really encourage your listeners to name the part of themselves that is that part that they love, and to name their ogre. Because when we the psychology word is concretize, which is make concrete each of those parts, then we have options, right? Then we have options. We're not just going to live with the toxic anxiety. We actually can build up the productive anxiety and the voice that runs that.
I love that. Just by virtue, I was working with a publicist, and she said to me, because I would have these things, I call them word holes, where I'm thinking of something and all of a sudden the word goes into a hole. And unless I can think of the word, I can't think of what comes after the word. And she said, so she was training me for media, you know, with this book and everything. And she said, Tracy, what I've noticed about you is within 5 seconds, it comes back. So just stall. But you know how it is when you're focusing on that one word. What's happening, right? You're, you know, the prefrontal cortex goes offline and you can't even focus on what the person is saying to you, right? Because you're thinking of that other thing. And so that leads me to the whole nature of ADHD. It makes sense that we would have anxiety because we have these busy brains with a lot of chatter and a lot of thoughts, right? All at the same time. And that's part of why we're creative and part of why we're so endearing. But it could also create anxiety. It makes perfect sense to me.
Yes. And in my book, you know, What Your ADHD Child Wishes You Knew, on my card deck, I talk about another reason that anxiety exists for people with ADHD. When you are young and you get feedback about the way that you have missed the mark, the way that you have disappointed people, the way that you're doing something that isn't neurotypical, isn't what people expect, you start to become aware that something isn't right with you. That's in quotation marks for all the listeners. And you begin to worry about when is the next time that I'm going to mess up that I didn't even know I had done something wrong in the first place. And over time, this develops into a kind of, you know, hypervigilance, like you're always thinking about that, or it comes up in times where you're worried about your effect on others. And this is what is kind of also a foundation of anxiety, particularly social anxiety. We also know that anxiety travels in families. There's a genetic predisposition to anxiety. People can be wired for it. I have a whole family of people who are wired for it, and that I come from, and some that I helped create. It's not like depression, which we see more is inherited, or bipolar disorder, or ADHD, actually. But there is a genetic predisposition.
Perfect segue, Sharon, to what a lot of girls with ADHD struggle with, and women, perfectionism, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So can you explain a little bit about how that comes about based on what you're saying?
Well, I think, you know, there are lots of different types of anxiety. There's general anxiety, there's hoarding, there's OCD, post-traumatic stress disorder, social anxiety. And, you know, when kids are younger, there's separation anxiety or stranger anxiety, those kinds of things. When I think about perfection, I think about the umbrella of social anxiety. And we have social anxiety, then we have RSD, and then underneath that we have perfectionism and imposter syndrome. And so they're all under the umbrella of general anxiety, but they're also specific to social anxiety. So perfectionism is really something that is culturally laden. We receive images about how girls and women are supposed to look. We receive directives about how they're supposed to behave and how they're supposed to think. And so these all combine into a way of considering ourselves, that we have to meet these standards. Usually the standards are unreasonable and pretty much impossible to achieve, but we are attempting to meet them anyway. And then we judge ourselves for not meeting those standards. So what social anxiety, rejection sensitive dysphoria, perfectionism, and imposter syndrome share is a core sense of deficiency. I'm not okay as I am. And so because women with ADHD may be misdiagnosed or not diagnosed or not given the supports they need or struggling without having a name for why they're struggling, I see a lot of perfectionism. I think you do too, probably. And the standards, not just of judging yourself, but a perception of social standards about how you're supposed to be, and then turning it out towards other people, judging others or pushing others to be perfect as well.
I'd never heard that second part, but I think you're absolutely right. And if it's an area of interest, we then become hypervigilant, right? And we notice everything in that area. Yeah. And then we can be really critical and like, I kind of resemble that remark, you know, when it comes to certain things with my family, like things that I noticed that they could care less about. What would it feel like to jump out of bed every morning in love with your career, your relationships, your life? If you find yourself lying awake at night wondering, who am I really? What would make me the kind of happy that doesn't fade after 2 months? Why am I clear on what I don't want to do, but clueless about how to figure out what I do want? Then join me for my free What Do I Do With My Life Masterclass, where we'll talk about how to become the expert on you and make better, quicker, and more confident decisions in your personal and professional life. Which of the many ideas that you have is the one you should actually pursue? And what would it really look like for you to live to your full potential? If this sounds like a fit for you, join me for my free What Do I Do With My Life Masterclass by going to spyhappy.me/class. See you there.
Right. And as they age, we need to not say anything about those things, right? Like, when they're 10, you're like, no, I'm sorry, you have to wear something different to Thanksgiving. You can't wear your sweatpants. But when they're 25, you don't get to say that.
Wait. Really? So I always do these big, my holidays are Christmas and Easter. But I remember reading in the Wall Street Journal that we are becoming a nation of slobs. And I make such an effort to make everything beautiful. And I'm like, you're going to show up in your sweatsuits? I'm not allowed to say anything about that? Really, Sharon?
It's up to you. I know that I can't say anything to my kids. If they ask, what's the dress for this event, I'll tell them. and most of the time they know enough now. But sometimes, they do what they want. But my kids probably are older than yours. I mean, I have grandchildren. My son and his wife decided to have children before being 30. And my second child is very artistic and, you know, depending on the day, that's what they're wearing. So yes, it is amazing to be a grandmother. And of course, I have lots of perfectionism about it.
Oh, I'm sure, right? Oh, I can't even imagine, like, if they're doing something differently, and it's not just your children, but then their partners, right, that influence what happens. And I don't know, can I keep my mouth shut? But I just feel like if I'm going to make such an effort to put on a beautiful holiday, and it's really important to me that people aren't showing up in sweatsuits, I just feel like it's disrespectful. And maybe I'm going to have problems down the road. My kids now, and I have my son just turned 22 and my daughter's 25, and they totally agree with me. I don't know if they still will, but I don't know. It's just one of those things. My mom was like that too, though. And, you know, now that my mom's gone, I've lost that ally. And I'm just so afraid that our holidays are going to denigrate into like gym time, you know?
Well, I doubt it. And some people like to go to Thanksgiving in their sweats because they want to be able to be relaxed when they eat a big meal. So that's fine.
That's the only thing that keeps me on the straight and narrow. You know, if I'm there in my sweats, it's all over.
Oh, you are hilarious.
So this is what I have to look forward to, Sharon, huh?
No. Really what you have to look forward to is I zip it, I smile, and I keep my arms open to welcome everybody with love in my heart. And I'll tell you, my little grandson was here this past weekend and my birthday, and I asked the parents if I could take him to the playground, and they said yes. So I put him in the stroller, and I walked him down to the playground. We got to the playground, and he's a child who likes to look at everything before going in. Right? He likes to take it in. So we're standing there and he looks at me. He's like, "Manos, Bubby." So Bubby is a Yiddish term for grandmother. I use that. And Manos is because my son speaks Spanish to him. So I put my hand down and he put his little hand in mine. That is like filling up my bucket for month. That'll be like 2 months of bucket full for me. And that's what it's all about, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, we worry and we focus on all of this stuff that ultimately is superficial when really, I mean, what we're talking about here is the difference between power and connection, right? It's going to be my way. This is the right way versus we are going to connect and it's going to be all about love.
Although don't wear your scruffy, unwashed clothes to my Thanksgiving table. I feel the same way.
You agree with me. Oh my gosh.
Because I've worked so hard to make the table nice and the good meal and everything. Yeah.
Well, at least we agree on that. What's interesting to me, though, is how you made that segue from perfectionism and how many of us with ADHD, especially women, struggle with perfectionism, but then how we turn that perfectionism outward on other people and can be very critical when things aren't done the way we think they should be done.
Exactly. And judgmental. And people feel that even if you're not trying. You know, you could give a look or a sigh or, you know, turn around or something. So I think it's important to really look at that core sense of deficiency. Like, I'm not enough unless everything is in a particular place in a particular order. When really what you're saying is, I'm defining myself by these external measures. You know, what is the internal measure of how you're going to define yourself? Because that's what really matters. That's who you are. And when we can grow that, we will both reduce our anxiety and will increase our confidence.
Wow. Because you're already dealing with your own anxiety, right? And then you're just going to make it worse if you're then putting it on other people, that if they don't behave a certain way or they don't do things the way we want them to do, that's going to make me anxious too.
Right. That's going to create for me discomfort. And really the thing is, okay, so you're uncomfortable. Like, you know, what does that mean? You know, none of us have lived a life to this point where we haven't felt uncomfortable at some point. You know, we've all had to be disappointed. We're born with a very flabby disappointment muscle, and we strengthen it through our life experiences. And what I see for a lot of women is that they try so hard to make sure their kids aren't disappointed or uncomfortable, or their partner isn't disappointed or uncomfortable. And, you know, what I really want to encourage you is to say, you know what? Everybody has to live through what they have to live through, to learn, to be on their own path, dare I say, karmic journey. And so I think that it is important, partially because of living with ADHD and feeling criticized along the way for the things that you're not doing, that then you hold yourself to an impossible standard of doing things so that you won't get that kind of criticism. It's kind of like it's just you're living with an impossible task. So let's rewrite the tasks so that they're doable and you can feel good about what you can achieve. That will help reduce your anxiety.
Okay. Final question on anxiety. Well, it's a two-parter. What is social anxiety? How does that differ?
Well, social anxiety is when people are afraid of humiliation or rejection in social situations from other people. So how it shows up in real life is that I am with you, Tracy, and we're having this conversation, but instead of being 100% in this conversation, a good portion of me would be in my head thinking, what does Tracy think about me? Am I dressed okay for the show? You know, am I interrupting too much? Am I talking too much? You know, I'd be spending a lot of time thinking about that, which means that I'm not actually present to answer your questions. And show up for the show. And so when people struggle with social anxiety, they are very much caught in the worry about being humiliated or being judged by others, and they spend time there. So with social anxiety, we want to get people out of their heads into the present moment. With general anxiety, we want to actually use mindfulness to help us calm down our exaggerated thinking. So there are different tools for different types of anxiety, of course, but it is important to really understand that social anxiety is when you're so worried about what other people are thinking. You know, and so therefore you avoid situations, you hold yourself back, may be critical. And so like you have five outfits that you want to wear to this meeting at work, you can't pick one, then you're late for the meeting. So then you're angry at yourself because you couldn't pick the right outfit, you know, and now you're late for the meeting and everyone is going to see you come into the meeting late, which will be humiliating. So maybe you just shouldn't go to the meeting at all.
Oh, geez. So what helps reduce social anxiety, like in the particular situation that you were just talking about?
What we would want to do in that situation is to, you know, I had trouble getting dressed, I'm running late. I would personally recommend that you text your superior or your colleague to say, I'm on my way, but I'm running a little bit late, complicated morning. So you're accountable. You're taking responsibility for the fact that you are running late. Most of the time for social anxiety, what we want to do is get out of our heads into the moment. So we want to notice how are people looking at us? What are they saying? Reflecting back some of what you hear to participate in a conversation instead of waiting for your turn to talk. These are all things that help reduce social anxiety, and also creating a stepwise ladder, if it were, I like to say a spiral staircase. So I want to go to my favorite cafe and order coffee and a cookie and sit and eat it in the cafe. But I'm worried about what people will think about me having coffee and a cookie. Oh, wow. You know, doesn't she, you know, what if, you know, maybe I think that she's going to gain weight, or they think I'm too big or whatever it is. So I'm not going to go to the cafe. So we want to start small. Like, okay, why don't you just go to the cafe and walk in the door and then leave. Practice that. How does that feel? When you're comfortable with that, then you can go to the cafe and see what's in the counter that's being displayed, maybe then and leave. Then go to the cafe and order just a coffee. And take your coffee, perhaps your cookie if you're feeling particularly brave, and leave and eat it in your office or in your car or someplace where no one's watching you. And then ultimately get to the place where you can order the coffee and the cookie and sit in the restaurant. Because people who have social anxiety sometimes can't eat in front of other people. Some people have trouble saying hello to people they don't know. So you're walking down the street and someone says hi to you and you're panicked. Who is this person? I don't remember who this person is. I don't know if I've ever met this person. And you don't say anything, right? And so when we don't say anything, we actually create more drama than is necessary. I worked with this girl. She was 12. She went to camp and her camp had like a special like counseling support program. And so before camp, I talked to the person who was running that program, and we agreed that if my client was having a tough time, that they could call me. So I'll call my client, Maria. So Maria went to camp, and Maria was having a tough time because Maria had ADHD. Maria was very anxious. She had an anxiety disorder. And Maria also, in my opinion, was level one in autism, what we would have called Asperger's. So Maria says, we get on the phone and she's like, Dr. Sharon, I have a big problem. I said, well, what is your problem? She said, well, people come up to me and they ask me something and I don't know the answer. So I walk away and then they think I'm mad at them and then they don't want to be my friend. I said, okay. I said, how would you feel if someone came up to you and you asked them a question and they turned around and walked away? And she said, well, I think they didn't like me. And I said, okay, do you think that's what might be happening? She said, yes. And maybe I asked the wrong question, so I might feel bad about myself too for that. And I said, well, that's possible. So here's the thing I want to teach you, Maria. Actually, it's okay when someone asks you a question for you to say, wow, that's a good question. I don't know the answer to that, or I'm not sure what the answer is. Can I think about it and get back to you? And there was this silence on the phone, Tracy. And I said, are you there? And she said to me, Dr. Sharon, am I allowed to say that? Am I allowed to say that? I said, yes, you are. Because people do it all the time. You know, you're doing an interview, Tracy. You're not sure how to respond to a question. You're going to say, that's a very interesting question, you know, to buy yourself some time to respond to it. The thing is, I said to Maria, you have to get back to them with the answer. She said, okay. So I said, let's try this for a week and we'll meet next week and we'll check in. So we get to our session the following week and you know, she gets on the phone. She's like, Dr. Sharon, it is a miracle. I said, what? She's like, it works. It works. People ask me a question. I say, I don't know. I'll think about it and get back to you. And then I think about it when I have the time to really think about it. And I get back to them and it's fine. And two people want to be my friend now.
Oh my gosh. That sounds like the best job ever, right? With these little kids.
So good. And, you know, I still work with Maria. She is a junior in high school. She has done things like been in the school musical, taken a semester abroad, you know, like going on a program this summer across country in a bus with other people.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. And the thing is, had she not ever worked with you, she'd be a junior in high school and probably have no friends and be doing nothing and just beating herself up even more. So,
and now she has friends and we've worked on this over and over. That's the thing that we want to understand about anxiety, Tracy. It's not a one shot. I'm going to try this. And if it doesn't work, then it's a failure. It doesn't work like that. Practice makes progress. You try it. It maybe it works, great, do it again. If it works, if it doesn't work that time, no problem, pivot. That's what a learning experience, that is what a growth mindset is all about. And if it doesn't work, if you try something and it doesn't work, okay, it didn't work. It's not the end of the world. You're just gonna regroup. Maybe you need to talk to one of your lifelines. TV show.
Call a friend. Oh my God, that's so cute. And I have to say, you know, I know we weren't going to talk about your book, but I did read it and I loved it. And you know what I loved most about it is just how strength focused it is. I can't imagine any parent who is struggling with a child with ADHD not getting so much out of this in terms of it really is all about positive emotion, right? And if we can wrap everything that we do and how we work with our kids and what we teach them in positive emotion and really get them to tap into who they are and what feels right and what feels good, it's everything. It's everything.
Thank you so much. That means so much to me coming from you. I can't tell you, I'm very touched. I think a strength-based approach to ADHD, to anxiety, to depression, to life is the only way to go. You know, we need to lean into our strengths. We need to lean into our inner allies, our inner Jedis, our Tina Trailblazers, because there are always going to be triggers. There are always bumps. The obstacles will come up. It's how we respond to them that makes the difference. We can't get rid of them, but it's how we respond.
Yeah. And I think that when we are working using our strengths, it really reduces the shame, right? And that's really the worst part of all of it is when you feel shame about who you are.
I call it the shame snake pit, you know, because I always think about Harrison Ford in Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's like, oh, snakes. Why did it have to be snakes, right? And that's kind of how it is when you're in the shame pit. You know, there's like snakes all around and all you're doing is looking for the ladder to try to help yourself climb out, right? And we have to really, really learn how to talk to ourselves. Do I have moments where I'm in the shame snake pit? You bet. I bet you do too, Tracy. We all do. It's how we have set up resources for ourselves in those moments. Like, who are my two friends who I can call or text when that's happening? I myself have a happy playlist. So when I'm feeling, you know, blechy, I will turn on my playlist and, you know, I'll take a walk. I have a list of things to do when I'm spiraling. And one of the main things that we can do when we're spiraling is to check in with someone else. You know, and that includes a part of ourselves to be able to say, it's okay that I'm struggling right now. I don't have to know how to do everything right all the time. I'm doing the best that I can with the resources I have available right now.
Absolutely. Sharon, are you working on something that you want to tell us about?
I am working on my next book, which is about ADHD in adults and anxiety.
Go figure. We got you first.
Yep. And so if any listeners are interested in talking with me about that, I'm going to hopefully be sending out a survey and interviewing some folks. And I'm also always offering groups, classes actually, on various topics about related to living with ADHD. So that's kind of what I'm doing now. And I'm really just excited to be here talking with you and hearing about what you're doing, because I'm so excited for you. And I'm so proud of you because you've written a beautiful book. Really beautiful, Tracy.
Thank you. Okay, so you've got to give us the URLs. Where do we find you? How do we connect with you?
The best way to find me is on my website, www.dr, as in doctor, SharonSaline.com. And my handle on social media is capital D R Sharon Saline. So it's kind of consistent. And so that's how you can find me. And I also have a lot of videos on YouTube that will be helpful. Many of the sessions that I've done for Attitude are up on my YouTube channel and they cover a whole variety of topics for adults living with ADHD, as well as some things of my own. So please stay connected. I would love that.
So you're on YouTube. Are you on Instagram?
I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. I'm on X and LinkedIn. I think that's it.
That's enough, don't you think?
I think so. I like doing all those things, but what I most like is talking with people and interacting with them. So if you're listening and you would like to invite me to come speak to your community, watch out. I'll come.
Aw. Well, it was such a pleasure to finally meet you in this kind of a forum. I know we've chatted before, but you are just a delight. So thank you.
Oh, you are so welcome. Pleasure is all mine.
Thank you. So that's what I have for you for this week. If you like this episode with Dr. Sharon Saleen, please let us know by leaving a review. Our goal is to change the conversation around ADHD, helping as many women as we possibly can learn how their ADHD brains work so they too may discover their amazing strengths. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you here next week. Bye-bye. You've been listening to the ADHD for Smartass Women podcast. I'm your host, Tracy Otsuka. Join us at ADHDforSmartWomen.com, where you can find more information on my new book, ADHD for Smartass Women, and my patented Your ADHD Brain is A-OK system to help you get unstuck and fall in love with your brilliant brain. If you found value in today's episode of ADHD for Smartass Women and believe in what we're doing, please consider supporting the show with a one-time or ongoing donation at spyhappy.me/support. We couldn't do it without you.